Welcome to the Monday Minute of the Hunts Backcountry podcast. These are shorter and more informal episodes where we answer your listener questions. Steve, how are you today, man?
Good. Finally, I tried to.
Finally.
The wild sheep banquet was Saturday night, and forgot that I'm almost 40. I was thinking I was 21 there for a few hours, and definitely felt that Sunday. It was my wife went and she'd been playing pickleball, so she was playing, and it was just me and the two kids, and I was just like laying on the couch, my head's pounding, and my boy was like, "Dad, let's go do something." I'm like, "But I just, oh, I can't do it." I was like, "Dad, this is, you're not being a very good dad on Leprechaun Day. We're supposed to be doing something fun." It
Did he
was
say
like,
that?
"Yeah," he said,
Oh,
"Leprechaun
dude,
Day,"
that's all
and
right.
freaking, I was like, "Dad, you're not being a very good dad." Like, I'm sorry, bud, I failed you. But I was a full 24-hour hangover, man. I'm glad to be feeling normal again.
Well, as you said, you're pushing 40.
I know, not 21 anymore, it was fun for about 2, 3 hours there. Yeah,
So
but sheep banquet was super fun. That place is just packed house, and actually Keith, one of my buddies, won the top tier package. I don't know, probably $10,000 worth of stuff, a rifle, and
Really? Oh, heck
rifle,
yeah.
Swirl ELs. There was a tent and a sleeping bag and a stove and
No
tripod
way.
and yeah, man, just a pile of gear. It's pretty cool.
I know that SNS donates stuff, but I'm not sure if it was part of the package. Did you essentially donate to that package that your buddy ended up winning? Am I hearing like an under the table rig here?
Yep, you got us. Yeah, no, we did donate the binos for that, so pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was just a good time. It's lots of friends, and industry friends and stuff like that are there. So just chatting with people left and right, and had a really good time.
Nice. There's been so much going on, but last week on the Monday Minute, we talked about the Experience Project, which thank you to everyone who's left feedback and ideas for that, which we asked about. And again, that is still ongoing, so you can always send us an email, or I'll leave a link again to that. There's a real simple Google form you guys can fill out for feedback, but already been great to see what's incoming on that. And if you have other ideas or topics or suggestions, be sure to submit those. So we talked about that last week, and then we talked about our 10-year anniversary of EXO. And at the time of the Monday Minute, we didn't know, Steve, exactly what we were going to do. We talked last year about, oh man, next year's our 10 year. We should do something cool, yada, yada, yada. We mentioned it again, you and I, several times on and off. And essentially, it snuck up on us and we didn't know what the heck we were going to do. So it wasn't until, I think, Tuesday, we really figured out, like, okay, let's do this and we'll do like a little quick flash sale. And that went amazing and pretty crazy. So just again, pretty humbling to have everybody's support. Just wanted to say thank you for that. And you definitely made our 10-year anniversary pretty special.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
What else? Oh, also, we did the giveaway back in December, the end of the year giveaway. We launched K4 last year in March, right about a year ago. And again, you and I were talking, Steve, and it's like, let's do a giveaway, but it's a total surprise. So what we did is at the end of the year for 2023 in December, it was like a Christmas surprise. So everyone who had purchased a K4 pack at any point in 2023 was automatically entered into this giveaway. They just didn't know it until we announced it and picked the winners. And there was, I think we had 8 or 10 different kind of like prizes. The grand prize was a custom rifle that was essentially a clone of mine, chassis rifle. And we were going to let the winner pick things like the cartridge and et cetera. Well, the guy who won that actually happens to live somewhat nearby me. And that rifle was finished and built. And so I went with him this past Friday and went to pick up that rifle from the builder Sterling Precision, which was just a heck of a lot of fun. So got to meet Michael, the guy who won the rifle, and go pick it up, and he was overjoyed. So just something pretty cool to get to do is to give somebody a really cool custom rifle, and it was fun to actually be there and be a part of it and see his excitement. So that was a heck of a lot of fun for sure. Also last week, Steve, you had your big training week. How did it go? I know you're shooting for some good miles.
Yeah, I was shooting for 100, did not get there. I went full steam on Monday with the plan to get like 20 something miles in, and then ended up hitting snow way sooner than I thought and strapped on the snowshoes, and I think I got like right at 15 instead of 20, but that was 7.5, 8 of that was in snow on snowshoes, and I was running just my ultra 10 shoes that I plan to wear for the hike. So running ultras with snowshoes wasn't like the best combination. But then I definitely like my lower back just went, got on fire the last 5 miles of that to where I was like, oh crap. So next day I went a little bit easier, did a lot of icing. And then Wednesday did a good, I did it, ended up doing a speed day where I did it. It was just right at 10 miles, but doing over, kept the pace over 4 miles an hour for that entire duration, which is pretty tough to do with a loaded pack on anyways. And then yeah, I did another one Thursday, another hike Friday. And the good news is by the time like every hike kept getting better. As far as like less pain, my knee started feeling better, my back was starting to get better, and but I didn't get the miles on that I wanted to. So I'm gonna get back after this week, keep plugging away. Yeah, well, just I know I could do the hike right now. It's as you and I were talking before the podcast, is just what could pop up injury wise, you know, the nagging ankles or hips or whatever that's really gonna shut you down. So we'll see. It's I almost told, I think I was talking with Boshma. Tyler was in town for the sheep banquet, and it's like I feel ready. It's just at some point, some of this is just out of my control on if something pops up. Like I feel like I've done everything I could do. So we'll see. I still got, I mean, we're, I guess at this point, 3 weeks from now, we'll be back home from it, but there's a good 2 weeks of solid training. And, you know, I think lesson to be learned here, even if you're 2 weeks out from a hunt and you're like, oh, I didn't do what I want to do. Like you can make a lot of improvement inside of 2 weeks if you want, right? So just plans, just keep getting after it. And yeah, this week I want to do at least one big day where I hit, 40 miles or something like that. Just take an entire day off and start hiking at 6 a.m. and hike till dark. And then also going to focus on some, I think I'm going to go to Tram Trail, which is up by Table Rock. And it's probably the steepest trail just right out of Boise. There's a section of it, and just do it on repeat. Like my goal is 10 times. So it'd be like 6,000 feet of elevation. It's about 600 feet each climb. That's one goal, and do that with some weight. So just work on strength and yeah, keep plugging away. I'm getting excited for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got, and I'm, we've, we started a group chat. So it's been pretty cool. Just so people are posting their workouts, and a lot of guys are freaking getting after it, man. Like
Yeah.
Dan Solzman just did a 56-mile run this weekend. Other guys, just constantly posting 20-mile hikes. Everyone's it's gonna be a lot of guys who are ready for it this year, which is cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah, we had a massive fail. We Jakey Poo convinced us to use Snapchat for that, and that lasted all of like 3 days because that was holy crap. Talk about, yeah, we're too old for that crap. But the GroupMe app, if anyone's ever needed a group chat, it's been fantastic. Like I guess you use it with your son's sports, right?
Yeah, Jakey petitioned for Snapchat, and I told him, I was like,
Dude,
I will log in one time and that's it. And I logged in one time. I didn't know how to do anything. I hated it. Then I was like, all right, let's move this sucker.
I literally couldn't even figure out how to post stuff, dude. That was terrible. Yeah, certainly made me feel old because Jake's like, well, do you just go in and you push this button and this and this and this and this? I'm like, whoa, 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 way too much. It needs to be one button post. yeah, good times.
Good times. Yeah, I've been. It's funny you mentioned tram trail and repeats because that's, I mean, most of my training hikes have been doing repeats, just being in Missouri and trying to get elevation. It's like, okay, let me find this one decent chunk of elevation and do a bunch of repeats. And this past Saturday, I went and did a hike and was just trying to do more time on feet than I was pure elevation. And so it was like, oh, I'm not going to do a repeat. I'll actually, cover some different ground. And dude, it was like so nice to not be doing repeats for once. And then it made me think, I, as stupid as this sounds, I haven't put much mental energy into it. It's going to be freaking gorgeous. Like, I've been so focused
Oh,
on the physical aspect of the hike and doing it and training for it. And I've done a rim to rim, so I kind of know what it's like to be in the canyon. But I just have not allowed myself to think about how cool it's going to be again. I've just so focused on the training performance aspect of it. It was like, man, it's going to be hard and it's going to suck, but compared to my training, at least we're in the freaking Grand Canyon and it's going to be gorgeous. I'm so looking forward to getting back in there.
yeah. A handful of guys I've talked to have done that have just mentioned, how stunning it is. And certainly if you Google, reviews of people who have done the hike or trail run it, same thing. As you're saying, that reminded me too of there's gonna be times when you gotta remove your head from your body, right? When you're hiking, you're going through the middle of the suck. And that's a good way, like just gotta let your mind wander and forget what you're doing, and just stare around at the hillside and get distracted. It's a lot of mental games you got to play.
Sure. Well, it'll be good. As usual, we'll recap the death hike on the podcast and share what we learned and also get some different experiences and opinions.
We talked about how we're going to film it this year, and it's going to be fun to. I've already started brainstorming. I'm just going to pack a little camera in my pocket and just shoot some interviews before and during and after, talk to guys who've done it and, in our group done multiple hikes. And it's going to be, should be kind of cool film, I think, if
Yeah,
it comes together.
really good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, getting to some listener questions. This topic came up, and it's something we've talked about before, but it's worth one, quickly answering and revisiting. Two, Steve, you have a little bit more experience with it than in the times we've talked about past. And then three, we just have some great resources to share. So it's worth bringing this topic up again. But that topic is DIY dehydrated meals. And this guy wrote in and said, how do you guys dehydrate your home cooked meals? Is there a list of steps to follow? How much water do you use? And in what package do you all store the dehydrated meals? And how do you actually dehydrate them? Do you use a pressure cooker, dehydrator trays, etc.? And finally, what is your favorite home cooked meal to dehydrate for the field? So a lot of questions. We could talk very in depth about that, which we have done in the past. So, again, part of the reason I wanted to bring this question up was it is something that comes up a lot and kind of recurring, and then also just point some resources to you guys. So, this I know this is a very old episode, but way back in episode 129, we had Glenn on the podcast to talk all about doing DIY dehydrated meals. And even though that episode's a few years old, the information's fantastic. And Glenn has a site called The Backpacking Chef, which has been around for a long time and is an amazing resource on all things dehydrating. So, again, I'm leaving links to that podcast, links to Glenn's site in there. And then also, Kyle from Valley to Peak Nutrition has a DIY dehydration or dehydrating guide. He's essentially went through the whole process of learning, and he kind of narrowed down what he found, what he learned, everything from equipment to strategies and how-tos and recipes. That's a great resource. So be sure to check those out. And then to answer this guy's last question first, as we get into specifics, he says, "What's your favorite home-cooked meal to dehydrate?" I've mentioned this in the past, but Chili Mac is my favorite, and I'll leave a link to a basic recipe that kind of my chili mac recipe is based off of. And this kind of highlights the point, and it made me think of it again, because we don't eat this chili mac all the time, but we actually had it a couple weeks ago. And it's one of those meals that we'll make it, eat it as a family, and there's leftovers, and it's super simple just to take those leftovers, throw them on a tray, and dehydrate them. So it's easy to kind of add to your reserves of dehydrated meals through the year, when you have a good meal that you can just simply dehydrate. And so that chili mac's one of my favorites. I do leave the cheese out of that chili mac recipe. If you look at the recipe that I'll leave a link to, that's partially for reasons of dehydration, because cheese is one thing that doesn't re or doesn't dehydrate great and can spoil. And that's partially because my son has dairy allergies, as you do too, Steve. So to get into his questions a little bit, I do use a dehydrator, a standard tray-based dehydrator, as do you, Steve. I know you've gone through that. In terms of a list of steps, again, that's really answered in the podcast that we linked to previously, or that guide from Kyle. And there's just a ton of resources and videos out there. So there's just a lot to check out on that. And again, we'll leave links to all that. Steve, I know that you are, you basically drug your feet for a while and said, I want to try this, I want to try this, and then finally did it over the past year. So I'm just curious overall, to link back to your experience, would you say it was simpler than you expected,
Yeah, I remember. I think I
difficult?
remember saying on the podcast because I'd finally done it, made some spaghetti, threw it in there, and I was like, I can't believe how simple that was. That you just think it's this complicated process, and I'm sure you could make it more complicated if you wanted to, but. Like there was one I looked up, online, did some spaghetti recipe research, and somebody had done where they cooked all the ingredients separately and then combined them post, this to say they get better flavor that way, or other people are just like, I just make it and throw it in there, and so that's what I did, kept it simple, and it turned out really good. It was incredibly easy. You literally just cook food like you're gonna cook any other meal. I think you need to be somewhat aware of the ingredients, but if you just go Google search stuff or this Glenn's website, I'm sure it's got a pile of great resources there. And throw the thing on a tray, throw it in the dehydrator for 8, 10 hours. I just did it overnight. Woke up in the morning, checked everything. Yeah, it's good to go. The one thing I did for water, which was just a complete guess, is I weighed everything before and then weighed it afterwards and knew. That I was say it's like I'll say it was like 11, 12 ounces is what it weighed going into the dehydrator, and when it came out, it weighed 3. So I was like, oh, okay, 8 ounces of water, and that's what I did when I went to rehydrate it. I think it didn't quite rehydrate fully when I did like the 11 ounces of water. It was still a little soggy in there, but I mean, flavor was fine. So the next time, I just added like 10 ounces or something. And that ended up working out good. So, yeah, it's incredibly easy. Meanwhile, I didn't really go do much more with it after I made those spaghetti meals, though. On the flip side of it, there's a lot of companies out there that are making really high quality dehydrated meals right now that are very expensive. Put it, they're everything. You used to be able to get Mountain House for. Gosh, what was that back in the day at Winco? $4 probably, 4 or 5 bucks for a meal, and now you're 12 to 20, but you're getting really good stuff. So that Wild Society used some of those last year, as well as that Alpine Ranch. Those guys are out of Emmett, they're local. Holy cow, some really good stuff there. So I ended up with, I think we did, I can't remember, we like with the guy from Alpine Ranch, maybe. Did a discount pack trade or something. So we ended up with a bunch of meals and I ended up packing a lot of those and they're absolutely fantastic. And then the Wild Society has these tamales, which sounds really weird for a dehydrated meal, but man, those were freaking good too. Yeah, I think my plan for the future is just kind of do a balance of both, have a stash of, well, they said if you do, if you're, I can't remember. I think I bought that dehydrator for $229 on Amazon. So certainly within 1 year, if you're, you've got multiple extended hunts planned, you're probably going to break even. And then in the future, it's just, the cost of the noodles and spaghetti sauce and meat, right? Pretty dang cheap. So yeah, I doing what you're doing where you have it and you just pay attention. There's Trish makes my wife makes a homemade chicken noodle, and I've the last two times she's made it, I was like, because there's always a it's a huge pot that she makes, it's always leftovers. Like, man, I bet this would be freaking delicious. And then there's another one my wife makes with like it's like a burrito bowl in a crock pot, so like rice and chicken and beans and yeah, those two I keep meaning to do what you're doing, right? I mean, it's so easy to pull a dehydrator out of the pantry. I mean, you're talking less than 10 minutes to scoop some servings onto the thing, put in the dehydrator, press start, and then wake up the next morning and have those meals done.
There's so much information out there. It is one of those things that can be information overload. So I would just say, do what you did, Steve. Like, start with one meal you want to make and just try it. And then, I mean, even me, I've been doing this for years, but I still kind of standardize on like 4 to 6 go-to meals that I'll kind of make consistently each year throughout the year and into hunting season. So, and a lot of it's simple. It's I do a spaghetti as well. I do the chili mac I mentioned. I'll do kind of like a dirty rice and beans, like Cajun-y with some ground elk in that. Just a lot of simple stuff where you can make good meals. And then he did ask about storage. You can get fancy. You can do, vacuum seal bags. You can buy Mylar bags on Amazon. I've tried all the above. All I do anymore is just put them in a good quality freezer Ziploc. And then I just store them in the freezer throughout the year, the dehydrated meals. And then I'll just pull them out before trip and I rehydrate them right within that bag. So I'll just add the boiling water right to it, rehydrate it, eat right out of it. And it's just crazy simple. So yeah, there's back to your point. I do a combination of my own meals, plus there's so many great options out there. So we're definitely in a totally different place now than we were 10 years ago in terms of the quality of food you can have in the backcountry. That's for dang sure.
Yeah. Maybe we should add this to the content project. Have Jen shooting you, shoot a video of you cooking up a meal one night, throw a dehydrator. It'd be easy. Yeah, a little step by step.
Yeah, for sure. All right. This next question is an interesting one I've never thought about in the context that he shares it, and I don't have a great answer for you, but I have some thoughts. And then also, as I was looking at it, found some cool resources to share. So I feel like this Monday minute is heavy on us talking, but also just sharing some cool resources, which is great. But this guy wrote in and said, I have a question about sleeping pad R values. I'd be interested in knowing how much you inflate a pad affects the R value. If you're touching the ground, it's not providing much insulation, but at the same point, inflating it so it is rock hard isn't very comfortable. I'd assume the case is that the R value is somewhat affected by the amount of air in the pad. I've heard people talk about how some sleeping pads sleep warmer than others despite similar R values, and I wonder if that's because different types of insulation handle the deflation for comfort better than others. I haven't heard anyone address this topic before, and I'm curious if you know anything about it. So, to summarize, does how much air you have in a sleeping pad, how much you have it inflated, affect the performance in terms of R value or affect the warmth of the sleeping pad? Which I hadn't really thought about. And is you can think about it like in an extreme case. Yes, I would say if you don't inflate an air pad at all and you just have it laying on the ground, it's going to be less effective than if you had it inflated. But in terms of inflating it fully and having it, at its max capacity versus partially deflating it, which is something you and I do, Steve, and have talked a lot about, and how much comfort that adds to a pad when you remove some air. Is that making the pad less warm to any noticeable extent. So I think there's a few things to keep in mind with this. One is how air, or sorry, how heat is lost, right? So there is different ways that heat is either retained or lost, like radiance and convection and airflow, and there's a whole science to how heat is lost. And there's I'll leave a link to a great article that kind of goes through some of that. So air movement is certainly one of the ways that heat is lost. And quote unquote trapping air, people use that term. Like that's how down works, right? Like you have this barrier, this down medium that is going to help trap warm air that would otherwise be escaping from your body relative to the cold air that exists outside. So it's this pocket of air holding body heat closer to you and preventing that transfer from the cold environment outside. That is somewhat how a sleeping pad is providing insulation. But what's different with sleeping pads also is that most of the insulation factor, I shouldn't say most, some of the insulation factor is by trapping air, but some of it is because the insulation they tend to use isn't like down. It's usually a film. So there's more of this radiant-based insulation. So you have air being trapped in the pad, and then you have some sort of like film or radiant layer within a sleeping pad that is essentially reflecting your body heat back to you. And conversely, trying to, on the bottom, reflect the cold ground back towards the ground and prevent that transfer from happening. So this combination of like air plus this kind of radiant film that's trying to create this barrier of heat and cold transfer. So all that said to say, if you decrease the amount of air somewhat, you're decreasing insulation. But what I think most of the R value in most standard pads is also from that radiant film layer, if that makes sense. There's a really cool, and looking at this, because I was like, oh, we had the guys from Thermarest on our podcast last year. And that's episode 405, and I'll leave a link to it. And then I went to kind of confirm what type of insulation they were using and try to see what spec they had on their film within those pads, specifically the Thermarest NXT that you and I have been using, Steve. And they had a really, really cool blog article that talked about the development of the NXT and a lot about these topics more in depth. And I'd never seen it, Steve. It made me think of what we did with Behind the Design with K4. And they actually called this Behind the Gear. And it was this very in-depth article, blog article with videos and like photos and testing that they did about the Thermarest NXT. So again, we're not sponsored by them or anything else. Like there's no affiliation, but it's great content and it happens to be based around the pad that we've been using. So interesting question. I don't think in all practicality terms, to circle way back to his question, that removing some air from the pad to make it more comfortable is going to significantly functionally decrease the amount of warmth in that pad. What are your thoughts, Steve?
I would say it highly depends on the type of insulation that they're using. So, an old Big Agnes pad that they had down inside of it, I would think, yeah, that would be absolutely affected, right? Like, if you're decreasing the amount of volume inside there that the down can fill up and create that, air gap. But if you're, significantly reducing that, then yeah, it's going to be less warm. So, I just don't see. You're going to have to do that with any pad, right? So I guess if it's, yeah, if you know it's going to be a really, really cold night, you inflate it fully and just under, like, because you're going to sleep better because you're warm versus uncomfortable on the pad. I don't know how you balance that out, but I would just think it's, he said in this question there, right, that, I wonder if some pads, because of the type of value, get treated differently, get reviewed differently. Like, oh, this is a warm pad, this is a cold pad. I think a lot of that just stems from the, up until just a few years ago, did they actually have the standardized ASTM testing model that, companies were just, they even stopped throwing temperature ratings at things, right? They were just saying, or that, no, sorry, they took away the R value and just did like, oh, this is good to 30 degrees. This one's good to 0 degrees or whatever. Or some companies just had like a warm, warm versus cold pad. So a lot of that probably stems from just the inconsistencies that were out there, because I just saw that over and over and over again with pads I was using, where I always, I remember distinctly, like, man, I feel like this Therm-a-Rest pad, the original NeoAir, I was like, this just sleeps a lot warmer than other pads I tested, even though they were the same R value. And turns out the other ones were rated low and or too high, and then the Therm-a-Rest was rated under, right? Like, they were saying it was R3, and it ended up being like a 3.7 or something like that. So, yeah, just know high level for me, just know how important the pad is to your overall warmth out there. I mean, it's, to me, it's equally or maybe even a little bit more so than what's your sleeping bag. So if you got a really awesome, 15 degree bag, but a pad with a crappy R value, you're gonna freeze your butt off. And vice versa, you could have a really warm, you can get a NeoAir X Therm and probably be a 20 degree night and have a 30 degree sleeping bag on top of you and sleep pretty good. So just pay attention to that.
What is the, put some boundary, no, I don't want to say boundaries, but like a little more specific suggestions on R value? Because some people, I'm sure, hearing this, like, I have no idea what those guys are talking about.
Yeah,
I've
right.
never researched R values. Like,
I would say as a general hunting pad, you want to be close to four. So your September, October, November hunts close to four. If you're doing some really cold November, December stuff where you're single digits, then you can't get high enough. There's some pads are seven, eight, things like that. Like then, yeah, you're just looking for like a winter pad at that point. But those, you would think like, oh, I'll just get that super high R value, and in the summertime, just use it. You'll sweat your butt off all night long. It's amazing how much warmth they create. Yeah, I wish that was the answer. I wish like you could just buy a, just have the NeoAir X Therm and call it good. But no, it's way too hot for those warm nights. It's early September and it's 60, 70 degrees a night. You're just, yeah, it's like you can't get comfortable.
Yeah, same. It's somewhere around four is what I generally recommend. So they're just keep that in mind. There's ultralight pads out there that are lower in R value and typically also lower in comfort, which goes hand in hand. I mean, that's definitely something that I don't want to say I've learned over the years, but I mean, good sleep is worth it. So if you end up carrying some extra ounces, I'm not saying you need to carry a 3 pound sleeping pad by any means, but chasing the ultra light end of the spectrum in terms of sleeping pad is something that for me isn't worth it from a comfort and warmth perspective. So that NeoAir X-Lite NXT I mentioned been running is a 4.5. I've used other pads that are lower in the fours, some upper threes, somewhere around there is just a good do-it-all pad. And as you said, winter pads can get significantly higher, but I mean, in my opinion, they're just not, as you said, they're not good do-it-all pads, and it's relatively rare that people truly need them. I mean, you can take a like the NXT or something similar in that four range, and as we've talked about, if you're adding clothing to your full sleep system to increase warmth, like I've used pads in the low fours and used them in single digits. Would have been great to have a warmer pad, like if possible. Sure, but that doesn't mean that you're incapable of taking a pad like that and sleeping warm. You just are preparing for it and using clothing and other things effectively for those really cold temperatures. All right. Well, that's a wrap on this one, guys. Again, there's going to be a ton of links, as we've talked about, with the dehydration, with the sleeping pad stuff, with understanding heat loss. There's just a lot of cool stuff to check out in this one, as well as the feedback form for the experience project and so much more cool stuff coming. So as always, stay tuned. Send us your feedback if you have it. Check out the links in the show description. Appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.